Did
yeah,
you feel
absolutely. I
that?
mean, yeah, but you know, change is hard, even for adults, right? It took a while for me personally to embrace that, not because I didn't want to, but because I didn't. It was just a shift to realize, like, these are my people to go to and to ask, and I can trust them and their decisions and their answer. So I think it took all of us a little time to really like buy into. We had a leadership team before, but they weren't utilized in that way. So
what was it like when you finally were able to establish that trust? And
that was like, okay, come on now. We've got this. So every Friday, 9 o'clock leadership team meetings, like, okay, here's calendar and let's talk about issues. What teams do we need to, okay. So what are you going to do about it? It's not going to be on me. I mean, I'd write it down on these 3x5 cards that Emily always kid me about. I keep these in my pocket at all times. Like, okay, that's an issue. Let's throw it on the table. Issue, throw on the table. Who's going to pick all those up? Because I'm not going to do that. I got other stuff to do. I can't solve all these problems. We all need to be solving these problems.
I was not on the leadership, and I was on the leadership team. And I'd say, like, there was kind of a feeling of like being paralyzed. Like if you handed over a card, it was like, oh, do you really trust me to do this? But you did. And that took time, I think, for us to all learn is that one, yes, you trusted us. Two, we were capable of handling whatever was on the index card. And that three, you were going to hold us accountable ultimately, all of us at the table, to make sure that we had it resolved or we were coming back to that team if we couldn't resolve it or come up with a positive solution.
I'd love to hear about how y'all handled conflict.
You go
also
first.
In the leadership team.
John is blunt.
Like. Really? I don't think we would know that at all.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you call things as they are. And I think there were moments of being uncomfortable, but it was a safe place to feel like, for it to be uncomfortable. Right? Like it was very... because there was trust, right? Like it felt like a safe place to agree to disagree. It felt like a safe place to share. I mean, I think when I was new to that team, John, you had to push me. I felt very shy in that group and encouraged me to speak up and to share my input. And I think you probably did that for all of us. So, I mean, I remember conflict being not a huge deal amongst that leadership team specifically.
Yeah. Well, no. Okay, two things. Number one, you were exhausted as a mom, so you didn't know what you were doing half the time anyway. But Emily's just a cool person, and she's one that you can figure out really quickly that you can trust her. She's really intelligent, really articulate. So it's like, okay, that's a no-brainer. There were other ones on the team that I needed to deal with separately, and we would have our individual meetings, and then some people were hired and they didn't have the skill set needed for that role. And that had been tolerated. And I just, to me, we all get a paycheck. There has to be a sense of urgency, and these kids deserve better. Mm-hmm. So either pony up, or let's move on. I'll find somebody else. I'll help you get another job. Yeah. And so that first year, I think there were probably 8 or 9 that I helped go somewhere else because they weren't serving our kids. And I can't have that. I can't have that on my watch because if they're not doing the best for the kids, okay, the kids are getting a short end of the stick again. Can't have that. If I can fix it, we're fixing it. And then we're moving on, and no harm. I mean, no hard feelings, but you're going to do your job and I'm going to do my job. So I didn't remember a lot of conflict, even with parents or it was, this is what we need to do. We've all basically agreed to it, and let's roll. And then, you know, let's go. It's hard work. Let's go.
When you talk about So you made me think of the wealth of people on a campus like Walsum, right? Where it's low socioeconomic. We had a bilingual interventionist and a math intervention or a math instructional coach and a science instructional coach. We had all of these instructional coaches and all of these people, communities and schools. And I think that one of the other huge things that you did was give those positions direction. They were there. They were helpful. Mm-hmm. They were great resources, but they had little direction. Mm-hmm. And when you, like you said, when you don't have that master schedule up and when you don't know what the expectation of your job is because mm-hmm. it hasn't been defined, you aren't utilized to your maximum potential. And I think that we saw that a lot in some of those positions is that as you helped come in and define those roles that we then had mm-hmm. real extra support, right? Before it was just somewhat mm-hmm. like, yeah. It was a body on a campus almost. That was also, I think, hugely impactful mm-hmm. socially, economically, from the communities and schools standpoint to academically through those other positions. I don't know if you saw that or agree with that.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with that. I mean, I think the title budget was almost 500 grand, just title budget.
Wow.
And so when you have that much money to spend on that number of people, and I remember doing a faculty meeting and saying, are we using our title money efficiently? And I listed the salaries of the positions, and some people got a little bit upset about that. I'm like, well, we need to make as a team, as a school, yeah. We need to decide, are we getting our money's worth or do we need to spend that money somewhere else?
Wow.
I think we need to have that discussion.
What was that discussion like? Was that contentious? Like, I'd love to hear a little bit more about how you gave direction.
Well, I can remember that factory. I still have the presentation. It was dead silence. It was dead silence because I don't think they've had that kind of honesty or input or transparency before. And I'm talking, let's take communities and school. Great people. Oh man. And when you get the right people that jive mm-hmm. with your school, mm-hmm. rock it, man. Mm-hmm. We got it. When you don't, you don't. But when you do, you do.
Yeah.
And yeah. After I turned around, I had it on the screen. Mm-hmm. Here's our title budget and here's how it's being used right now. Let's just have the conversation of, are we getting our money's worth or blah, blah, blah. It was dead silence after that. And I looked mm-hmm. over at the table where all the title people were sitting and they didn't know I was going to talk about this because really it's coming from me, right? They were just looking at each other like, I can't believe he's doing this.
Yeah.
And I could tell it was not necessarily anger, but it was just shock that, we're part of $500,000 that's supposed to support this school.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had some good professional conversation. A couple of them were pissed, and we talked about that later. But for the most part, I thought it helped solidify the teachers and the staff on, are we on this mission and is nothing sacred to me, even my position. I mean, mm-hmm. if I'm not the best to run the school, let's mm-hmm. find another dude. You know, mm-hmm. I always said, hell, I'm not bilingual and I'm a principal of a bilingual campus. What were they thinking? So if it's not me, fine, let's find the best, but these kids mm-hmm. deserve the best. Mm-hmm. So let's do it, or let's find it, or let's change it, or buy it, or whatever. Mm. They deserve the best.
That is really powerful, John, in talking about how you really had that transparency. I'm just thinking back to when I was principal, some of the things that you're talking about that would have been beneficial to me. And I mean, I retired from, you know, public ed after 30 years and I'm still learning things. And I'm like, man, if I could go back and have a rewind, there are some things. And Emily, you know, that I would probably, you know, that's a great strategy on sharing the impact that dollars can make, especially in this time and space of budget cuts. I mean, how powerful would that be for an administrator to literally put up their title, their compensatory ed budget, and show that transparency of where those funds are going? Because that was an aha moment for me. I think a lot of your staff had no idea that their salary was tied to certain areas and the impact they were making or not making, you know, that could be a trajectory of whether, you know, their role would still be needed. That is like a huge takeaway from just this conversation and talking about takeaways. I know, turnaround schools.
You are very good at chat.
I said you were very
at confronting things in a way that, it, like I said, it made us all step up and go, oh yeah, I gotta really, like, that's me, like, that's my job, like, I need to be the one doing this, like, I need to be the one, like, pushing my, in special ed, I mean, you actually helped me create a higher bar for my kids. Like, I was happy when they made growth towards IEP goals, and I remember you telling me, like, it's not good enough. Like, I want to see it in their benchmarks. I want to see it here. And it did. It helped me set the bar higher for them. But I mean, you did that for all of us at the campus level, by having those sometimes uncomfortable, but like I said, it was a safe, uncomfortable conversations that I was a part of.
I'd love to hear, Emily, what made it safe for you? Like, what made even that discomfort, even that transparency that we typically shy away from to keep teachers happy, what made it feel safe and okay?
You know, I mean, and Jerry, you're exceptional at this too. I mean, so John came in, made everyone, all of us, feel incredibly welcome, made us feel heard, right? He always had an open door. So if you needed anything, like, he was there and he was listening. And so I think, and then he was taking action. And I think that just those things, having that open door policy, always available just to listen, to hear, and offering a lot of time, not necessarily a solution, but guidance. It just taking the time to build the trust with all of us made it feel safe and okay to have the challenging conversations. Well, and also seeing what we were accomplishing in real time, right? Like, knowing this is huge, like, what we're doing is, and I don't think we recognized that at the time, but.
Well, and I think building that teacher efficacy and that leadership pipeline, I mean, without even probably intentionally realizing it, John, but you were, you talked about it at the beginning when we first came on about the pipeline and building where you couldn't be the one solving all the problems. And so you kudos to you, John Hines, in being able to build that team in such where, for one, people wanted to work. You weren't having to breathe down their throat to lesson plan, to plan together, to really develop engaging lessons and, you know, be all about the kids. And two, I mean, a lot of people in this podcast may not know, but Emily and I was able to have an opportunity for Emily to join my team when I was principal. And John Hines, when you talk about building leaders, he has a talent in building the bench, because I can speak firsthand, when Emily joined our team, she was a standout from the very beginning. And so, in motivating kids, I mean, first and foremost, but also in developing the capacity of a team and leaders.
Since you mentioned it, Jerry, I'd love to know a little bit more about that. As John kind of spent all of this time and energy and effort into training his leaders, what was it like for you to have one of those on your campus suddenly?
She was a leader. She was a leader before I got there. Let's not do that.
She is a natural born leader. And I'll tell you, so what happened is I hired her when she stepped into the role at our campus. The special ed arena, it was, when you talk about change and turnaround, Emily, our special ed team was really a turnaround team when you think about it. Because when you talk about the purpose and the role that people had been in that space for a long time, tradition, the way we've always done it, change, those were a big words within that team. And I think in a year, Emily, we had people that came on board that were great fits, and the ones that were there that I talk about good fit. So good fit, John, when you talked about you helped people find their spot, I always believed that people got into the education realm to be a teacher because they really were there because that's where they were supposed to be. But there were times, depending on the circumstance, that they just weren't the right fit for that moment in time in that school population. And Emily was a pivotal part of that. Like she talked about year two, it was your second year we met and I'm like, look, Emily, I see in you something that I'm not sure you see in yourself. And it was always yet, you know, because with that growth mindset, and she stepped in with all, you know, all hands on deck and just was a phenomenal, leader in the behavior realm of that position. And so just, I don't know. Emily also is one that when I present to at the state conference, TEPSA, and I would do like, you know, training up school leaders. Emily, I don't know if you remember, but I always used your video clips of T-Tess as samples of when she would do her self-reflection. I mean, when you talk about A+ and going above and beyond to just show the work that takes place with her, she's that person.
Well, so I said, always been that student. So
nothing is halfway. And if she doesn't know it, she's going to roll up her sleeves and dive in to figure it out.
Emily, you said something really powerful earlier that we didn't, I want to hear a little bit more about, but, you know, I was asking about conflict and how you dealt with that and maybe some pushback. And you made a comment about like, you would see the results that the work was getting and realized something was working, that something different was happening. I'd love to hear more from both of you about that process of analyzing your results, tracking that, sharing that, how you communicated that with families or the community, like what, as you put some of these systems in place, and how did you track their efficacy? And then how did you communicate that? I know that's a big question, but I'd love to hear a little bit more about that because I know that is really important.
I remember data meetings being so unpleasant. But then I didn't feel as though I walked away from them like with a plan of action. And I'm not remembering our exact structure, but I do remember our meetings to analyze data, but it felt like when we walked out, right? Like I remember being math being a huge area of concern in fifth grade. Not only had we identified areas that needed to be taught, but we then brought in a district level instructional coach who partnered with our campus instructional coach to help guide myself, to help guide the math teachers in that grade level, to help team teach with us, right? So they were in there delivering the lessons and helping us do small groups. We had a co-teach class that year that was supposed to be like 5 kiddos. And then, you know, with enrollment at the end of the year, it ended up being a class with 10 kids with special ed support. So it was a heavy, heavy group. And I mean, so I felt though, as though when we left those meetings and I'm not even remembering the structure of them so well, John, so I hope you can speak to it, but we left with solid plans of action to then come back and discuss and look at the results again, not just a, we really need to reteach this, which is what I felt before when I'd been in those type of meetings.
Wow.
What about like communicating that and celebrating that when you saw victories? What was that process like?
When you set up meetings, like probably the number two mistake principals in general make, they don't set up meetings. And those are opportunities to communicate the great things. So if you're a principal and you stay in your office all the time, you're missing opportunity after opportunity to say how great your kids are, or to compliment your teachers, or to tell everybody this is planned out. Let's lower the stress level. It's just opportunities after opportunities. A lot of principals, especially the new ones, think, oh God, another meeting. I'm going to get cornered and I'm not going to have the answer, or I don't like speaking in front of my staff, those kinds of things. It's like, yeah, but you're missing opportunities after opportunities.
And John, I'm sorry to interrupt, but it just made me think that many times you had systems in place so that you could schedule a meeting. Because I think sometimes principals don't have those basic procedures, systems in place that they can't even get to scheduling a meeting. So I think that goes back to you having the basic structures in place so that you could have those meetings and not feel stressed about it. Like it's one more thing because you knew everything else was running smoothly or, you know, with a system so that you could do that.
No, I was going to say, one of the things I appreciate about both of you, John and Jerry, is that the immediacy that you respond to things once you've had those observations, like you both, like the conversations are happening in real time and not delayed. I had never really thought about the fact that you have to be the back end of that for y'all, being organized enough to make space and time for those things. Mm. But I think that you both did that so well that I remember as things arose, like we had conversations like immediately, same day usually.
Or you can choose to let things fester and go off course another month until your next faculty meeting.
Well, then there's the explosion. Logic, yeah.
That logic does not make sense to me. It's like, if we've got a problem, let's fix it now so that we can move on to the number two problem and the number three problem, because there's always going to be problems, right?
Right.
Beth, does that answer your question?
Yeah. I especially that idea that, you know, I think often data meetings are just, here's the data. And often it's not what we want it to be. And so we just go figure it out. And I love that concept of like, we're figuring this out right now. We're going to go try something different, or this is working really well. We're going to make sure that we do more of this, or that we keep doing this, or that kind of thing. Was there any difference in how you communicated some of that to families? Let me
think. Well, number one, communicating to families, that was a change, right, Emma?
Because it wasn't happening.
Yeah. And then communicating it consistently.
That's important.
Often, like my emails went out every Friday at 5:00. My parents knew it was going to be English and in Spanish. And I'm going to talk about the school and I'm going to talk about what I needed from them and some of the things we're going to adjust. So, and again, academics was not the focal point of that whole first year. It just wasn't. I had 50 other things trying to get fixed before I could focus on that. But let's go back to data. Since I do love data and I have got my system, I knew my data better than everybody else on the campus.
Yeah.
So when I walked into a meeting, I knew the data. And I think they learned they're going to need to know that their own data too, because here comes the questions and here comes not an interrogation, but let's have a professional conversation about what's happening. Are our kids learning what we're teaching? Our job is to ensure they learn it, not that you just taught it. So I don't want to hear that one. Did they learn it? And if they are, rock on. Let's praise. Let's celebrate. If not, perk. What are we going to do differently? And so that's the way we talk about data. Is it? Yeah, we're going to have data all year long. You better know it, because I will, because I've got systems in place to know the data, whether it be from attendance or behavior or IEPs like she's talking about. I've got systems built in that brings that data to me so that I can study it.
Isn't that one of the things that communities and schools started? I know they did a series of meetings after, and I feel like one of them was on understanding the data and scores and progress and how to help your kid at home, right? And providing resources. And I think the turnout to start was not what we would hope, but as more and more parents started coming, the word spread, and they ended up being really big meetings.
So it sounds like y'all really helped facilitate all those wraparound services so that parents knew what they had access to and were able to start using them, because it sounded like no one was being involved prior to the extent that, you know, once you came on board.
Yeah, I think they just weren't coordinated. Those services were there, but splintered. And so we started tightening things up so that if a child needed something, they got it immediately, not over here and then maybe 2 days later there or whatever. And it goes back to the Maslow. If kids are taken care of, now they can learn. But if they're not taken care of, if they're hungry, or if they're from a trauma inflicted home, okay, they're not going to learn, and they're probably going to come screw up the whole classroom because we're not getting that need met.
That's good. We're kind of coming up on our time now. We have a few minutes left. Jerry, do you feel like there's anything else, or any of you really?
I mean, John and Emily, most importantly, I want to thank y'all for being here. I mean, this, just taking the time to be a part of the conversation with this work is important to help others, because as we know, the struggles that we have within the education realm of alternately certified individuals, I mean, just not being able to fill spots in leadership or in teaching, this just, thank you. Thank you for being a part and being willing to participate, because Emily, I know you're probably juggling like five other things right now. You probably have had a couple of people walk in and your phone has probably been blowing up and you've handled it like a champ.
Well, I did have to have somebody bring me a charger because I left that at my other campus.
Well, I know your face. And so when I was watching, because we've worked together before so long, I'm like, okay, there's a lot going on behind the scenes, but she has that composure. She wasn't showing it. But just most importantly for y'all to know that the work that you do matters. And just so grateful that you are willing to take the time to be a part of this conversation.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for having us.
She rocks. She rocks.
Yeah. Yeah, I really appreciate it. John is like the systems person. I'd really like to hear just a little bit before we go about the systems and strategies behind these turnaround schools courses that you have been working on so hard. I know we're all excited to have some really concrete resources for campuses that find themselves in this situation where everything needs to be fixed. So I'd love to hear a little bit about kind of your thinking behind that, the strategizing behind that, and then just kind of tell folks what these resources are that are available to them.
First one is just getting a needs assessment of really trying to get your hands around what needs to happen at the campus, bottom line. Number two is thinking at the systems level, that if you think way up here, you're going to be able to see things where you adjust here and it changes 10 different things. Instead of working on 10 different things, look up here, use your leadership team and y'all, figure out we need to dial this a little bit different and it's going to affect five different things. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It puts you in a proactive mode. And so once you think leadership or systems level, you can teach that to your leadership team and then to your team leaders and your department heads. Everybody starts talking that language so that when you go into the number one system, in my opinion, is the master calendar, everything's planned out. You can plan out 90% of your entire year. So everybody knows when they're going to have to stay late. Everybody knows when we're going to look at data. Everybody knows. And so that lowers the stress level. What does for me as the leader, if I can pull up to my school and know about 90% of my day, this is what's going to happen. Okay, that's a lot better than pulling up going, I have no clue. Yeah. And you're just bracing for impact all day long. That's exhausting.
Yeah.
Then my meetings, it's opportunity after opportunity after opportunity.
Yeah.
To celebrate, to love on people, to mourn with people, because we need to do that too, right? To make those adjustments in action. I mean, in real time. Then communications, and God, there's communication with staff and then with central office and then with parents. If you systemize it, nothing falls through the cracks. No one gets left out. Everybody understands where we're headed. They may not agree, but at least they know, right? And then data collection. Y'all got another hour. We can talk about that.
I think we've decided. I think we have to have a continuation. We're going to have to come back, guys. There is so much.
I love data collection too. I can hop in on that.
Yeah,
I know. That's a whole nother.
Oh, I would love it. You need more teacher voices.
of getting that data to you so that you don't have to hunt for it. Mm-hmm. It's coming regularly, and then you can analyze it and then do what you think best with it, right? Then culture and climate for students and staff. Mm-hmm. That's, talk about another course. How to resource or how allocate your resources. And as a brand new principal, you don't even know what your resources are. So that is getting the biggest return on your investment or the biggest bang on your buck. Yeah. That's really what that's about. Instructional rounds and how you're the leader of, you're the instructional leader of the campus. You got to get that down pat, or it's just going to be hit and miss and nothing's consistent. Behavior management, holy smokes. Yeah.
That's a big one.
But it's getting the right people to the right kids to give the kids what they need. But that's a summary of that. Professional development for all staff, not just your teacher, but your paraprofessionals. Your custodians need professional development. Your secretary, all of that. And then celebrating and recognizing. I'm a point A to point B person. I'm not a frou-frou guy. But,
really?
But your staff needs it. Stop it. Your staff needs it. Your kids need it. Hey, your kids need stickers.
Oh, Lord.
To say,
oh my gosh,
I moved up a level and my principal is proud.
Oh my gosh,
yes, they need those stickers. So, there, those are the 12 courses. Done.
Oh, wow,
man, John. I wish when I first became a principal, I would have had something like that. I know I've told you before. I mean, wow, I would have like soaked it up. Right.
Well, I created what I wished I would have had.
Well, it's kind of time. We've been here for quite a while now, y'all. It flew by. I can't believe it. It's been nearly an hour and a half. One last thing before we go. I love to end with just one last word for our listeners, for our principals that are either struggling, feel isolated, feel like overwhelmed. I'd love just a quick word of what you would love to say to folks that are in that role now.
Somebody feeling overwhelmed. I mean,
Emily, why don't you kick us off?
Reach out to your people. Listen to your fellow principals. Listen to your colleagues, because we are a wealth of information, right? We've all struggled in some way or another. And then I would say, more than anything, ask a lot of questions and listen. Not just to your colleagues, but to your staff. Actively listen and really take in what they're telling you. I think that's my biggest one. I that's my go-to, is reaching out to my colleagues, and then for my team that works with me, it's just asking a lot of questions and really listening. And I learned that from these two here. So
I guess my message would be for principals, John, to own it and know, or look at it as an opportunity to make a huge difference for the kids and the teachers and the staff at that campus. And man, suck up as much as you can, soak up as much information as you can as soon as possible, so that you can be the best leader. And then aim for the best type of school, not just a better school, but the best. Go for the best.
Well, I think my biggest piece is to find your people. So all of this is great, but you have to be a part of something, be it a principal organization, be it an environment of people who are doing the same work. Because I know as principal, I would not have been able to make it without having that synergy of like-minded leaders that are all trying to do the great work in schools. So one of the pieces, I wouldn't have been able to make it. I had my one BFF principal. We talked in the morning, every morning at 6 a.m. on the drive into work. Just about our day, our celebrations, our struggles. Sometimes there were tears, because being in a leadership role is a very lonely space. It's a lonely spot. And, you've got to have someone that you can, you know, voice how you're really feeling. And then put on your big girl, big boy pants and then step out of the car and here we go.
Well, thank you guys all so much for being here. This was amazing.